Funding for this edition of Think Tank with Steve Adubato has been provided by
the Turrell Fund,
a foundation serving children,
New Jersey Sharing Network, Kane University, where cougars climb higher,
RWJ Barnabas Health, let's be healthy together,
the New Jersey Education Association,
New Jersey Board of Public Utilities, providing New Jersey residents tools to save money on energy costs. That's what NJBPU does.
Valley Bank, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey.
And by the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, moving the region through air, land, rail, and sea. Promotional support provided by
Meadowlands Media, a print and digital business news network.
And by
NJ Biz, providing business news for New Jersey for more than 30 years, online, in print, and in person.
Hi, everyone. Steve Adubato. We kick off the program with an important conversation with the United States Representative Congressman Rob Menendez of the 8th Congressional District. Congressman, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. Great to be with you, Steve.
You got it. Hey, listen, I know you were just running from a vote. I'm not going to ask you what that vote was on because this will air a little bit later. But the big, beautiful bill. By the way, do you call it that?
I do not. I do not.
I don't either. It's a budget bill, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's correct.
With a lot of stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
Of all the stuff in that bill, Congressman, what's your greatest concern?
The cuts to Medicaid. That's going to impact a lot of New Jerseyans. Congressman Pallone and I are the two Democrats in Energy and Commerce. Republicans tasked the committee with $880 billion in cuts, and that was primarily focused on Medicaid. So the two parts that I'm most concerned about are in terms of how those cuts to Medicaid are going to impact all New Jerseyans, not just those that rely on Medicaid, which in New Jersey is NJ Family Care, but for everyone in our healthcare ecosystem. So the people who are on Medicaid now could potentially lose coverage on Medicaid. As you know, this is an important program for so many New Jerseyans, from children, pregnant mothers, seniors, people with long-term disabilities. So I'm worried about them getting caught up in the red tape that the Republicans have added to the Medicaid program. I'm worried about a lot of our safety net hospitals. We have three of them in Hudson County because more people are going to show up there for their primary health care because they no longer have health care coverage through Medicaid. That's going to make the system more expensive. And once the system's more expensive, that means that premiums are going to go up for New Jerseyans. So there's going to be really bad health care outcomes for so many of our friends and neighbors. And that's the thing that really troubles me with this bill.
What about the part of the bill that extends the Trump tax cuts on the wealthiest Americans that happened in 2017? It extends those tax benefits. And this legislation does that. Do you believe that that's being done largely by making cuts in other places, Congressman?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they tried to make this as deficit neutral as they could.
What does that mean, deficit neutral?
Sure.
You don't add
so,
to the debt
so
or the deficit?
Federal government's simple, right? There's money in terms of how you raise revenue through taxes. So if you have tax cuts, that means you have less revenue in. If you want to offset that, right, then you have to reduce federal spending. And that's why you saw a huge cut to Medicaid, to SNAP. Those are big federal programs.
Go back to SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, otherwise before that known as food stamps. There are some people who we've interviewed, some right-leaning conservative folks who said, listen, it's no big deal. That doesn't really impact people. And I said, there are thousands, hundreds of thousands of people in New Jersey who rely on SNAP. What is the real impact?
The real impact is that people who rely on the program, who are living largely paycheck to paycheck, are going to have less assistance to put food on their families' tables. That's going to impact the nutrition of children, of adolescents, of seniors, right? So We know there's an affordability challenge across the country and especially in New Jersey. And a lot of families, a lot of individuals are doing everything that they can every single day to make it work. The government in certain places tries to help. And SNAP is one of those places to make sure that people don't go hungry. cutting SNAP, which is just cents and dollars on the day, right? This is not something like a huge payout, like you mentioned, to the tax cuts to the most wealthy amongst us, who are going to see tens of thousands of dollars in returns every year. This is dollars a month that go and help people who are doing everything that they can to make ends meet. And it's going to impact their bottom line, especially as we continue to see grocery prices increase. So I would disagree with anyone that says this will not have an impact on our neighbors here in New Jersey. And it's going to be a problem for a lot of individuals and families.
Switch gears. Immigration.
Yeah.
You have one of the largest immigrant populations in your district, based largely in Hudson County, fair, Congressman?
That's correct.
Okay. You were there with Newark Mayor Roz Baraka, with your colleague, or two of your colleagues, Bonnie Watson Coleman from the central part of the state, Congresswoman MacGyver in Newark. You were right there in that scrum with the mayor and your two colleagues and those ICE agents at Delaney Hall in Newark. Describe that scene for us.
Yeah, it's something that I never envisioned experiencing in my life. You know, Congresswoman Watson Coleman and MacGyver, we've done these types of oversight visits previously to the Elizabeth Detention Center. There's something that we are allowed to do and have a right to do under law. We've done it previously with no issue. When Delaney Hall opened, we wanted to make sure that we, again, conducted oversight at the facility. And every step of the way, we were met with resistance. Ultimately, the scene that you alluded to was something that was an escalation by DHS, by ICE. There were over 20 armed, masked, unidentified ICE HSI agents there to engage with the mayor of Newark, the mayor of the largest city in New Jersey.
HSI is Homeland Security?
Investigations, that's correct.
Okay.
And all sit under DHS. And so you had four elected individuals. Again, the mayor of the largest city in New Jersey and three members of Congress, and they showed up with 20 armed individuals to engage with us, and specifically with the mayor. And there was no need for that. We had gone in. We obviously were allowed in because we have a right to be there. The mayor had been allowed in, which is why the U.S. Attorney for New Jersey dropped the case against him. And what they
Alina
chose
Haba.
To do...
Alina
exactly
Haba, who
right.
is, as
and
we they, speak, acting. But go ahead.
Correct. And had been Trump's personal attorney. And what I saw that day was, in my opinion, something that should concern all Americans. Now, we can have disagreements about immigration, but the fact that the federal government felt like they could put their hands on two female members of Congress, that they could get into a physical altercation like that, and try to intimidate three members of Congress and the mayor of New Jersey's largest city, and do so without consequence, without fear, to me shows that in Trump's America, no one should really feel safe. You saw this with Senator Padilla in California. There are going to be more and more instances of this where
the Senator Padilla
branch
was wrestled to the ground by ICE agents.
That's correct.
As I believe he attempted to ask a question of Kristi Noem, is it?
Yeah, Secretary Noem, that's correct.
Okay. So what do you think this is all indicative of, Congressman?
That the executive branch wants to go unchecked, that the president wants to go unchecked. You've seen an attack on federal judges, which, as you know, is a very sensitive thing in New Jersey, where we saw a couple of years ago what happened to Judge Salas's family. We should have separation of powers. We should have checks and balances. That's what this country, what our Constitution is founded on. And this administration, this president, doesn't want to feel bound by those separation of powers, by those checks and balances. They want, and he wants, complete authority. The people around him want to try to create complete authority for him. That is a very dangerous thing for all Americans.
Congressman, put up the graphic right now for a mini-series we've been doing for a while now called Democracy in Danger. Here's the question that I keep wondering about. President Trump has a tremendous amount of support in this country, including on immigration. Now, you can debate the tactics and the process, but a vast majority of Americans do not believe that those who are here illegally deserve due process, that the president's not overstepping. The Supreme Court has consistently, as we speak, we actually have an interview coming up with a professor at Seton Hall Law School on this. The Supreme Court has backed him up. So what has he done, adjudicated by the courts or by Congress, pushback on Congress, that's been determined to be unconstitutional?
Well, one, and it's a complicated question to ask because you are right. His conservative Supreme Court has largely ruled in his favor.
They said it's okay, Mr. President.
But I think what's important is what he told the American people. And what he told a lot of people, including in the Hispanic community, was that he was only going to go after criminals. And what we have seen day after day from the beginning of his administration to present day is that that was a lie to the American people and to a lot of people who supported him. They thought if there are people here that are here illegally and who have criminal records or violent criminals, they need to be removed from the country. That is something that there's bipartisan support for. But when you go and you start ripping communities apart, when you go and you start ripping families apart, and as you know, in New Jersey, we have a lot of mixed status families. It's now progressed to the fact where Tom Homan is saying that they can basically racially profile across the country that if someone looks to be Hispanic, they can be apprehended by ICE. That's a problem. And I think most Americans know intuitively.
The president's lead appointee,
yeah,
as it relates to this mass deportation effort, he said what about people who look Hispanic?
Basically, that there is that ICE has the right to racially profile in this country. And we can get you the exact quote on that, but it was said within the last week. And that is a problem. And if you look at what's happening in our communities, you know that that's how they are engaging, right? Because targeted encounters with people with criminal records is one thing. Mass raids, mass sweeping of Home Depots, mass sweeping of public spaces, including sensitive locations, in my opinion, it's not what the American people signed up for. And you see in a lot of polling that the president is losing ground on immigration because this is not the version of immigration enforcement that people signed up for.
Congressman, shift gears dramatically. We're also part of an initiative called the First 1,000 Days. What is it about? It's about childcare, from a woman becoming pregnant to her baby being 2 years of age. Those first 1,000 days, affordable, accessible, quality childcare. You've talked about the child tax credit. Explain to folks what that tax credit is and how it relates to childcare.
Sure. So one, let me just touch on this critically important issue that you raised. If we want to have healthy Americans, it starts with the pregnancy. It extends through those first 3 years, 2 to 3 years. We know that if the mother and the child have access to health care, you get better health outcomes. If the child and the mother have access to healthy food and nutrition and medicine, those are better health outcomes for both the mother and the child. And we can give every American a strong foundation. It's something that we should all be in complete agreement on. With respect to the child tax credit, what we saw was several years ago, the child tax credit was money that went directly back to families with children, and it lifted over 50% of children out of poverty. We know that too often that a child's academic and health outcomes are tied to their family's income. So if we can put money back in a family's pocket, right, we know as a parent, I have two young children, that we're going to invest that in our children. Either it gives us the ability to have a stable place to live, which is an important thing for the health of any individual. It's the opportunity to make sure that their children are well fed. If they're between the ages of 0 and 2, that they have access to formula, to diapers, all of those things. And we saw a dramatic impact of giving families money back, tax credit, right? And what we saw in the outcome when we had the full child tax credit was over half of children being raised out of poverty. That's an incredible thing and shows what we can do here at the federal level to make sure that we're raising a healthy generation of Americans.
Before I let you go, I'm sure there's some people that would expect me to ask this, but I've known your dad for many years. When I was running for the state legislature as a very young man, he was very supportive of me. I've interviewed him more times than either one of us want to admit. Anything that you would want to say to the public about your dad as a father and as a grandfather?
You know, I would say it's a challenging time for our family. There's no hiding from that. But what I would say is every family has a series of challenges that they have to navigate. I know that individuals have hardships every single day, and that's something that we're dealing with as a family. You know, I made sure that the last several weeks he could spend time with my kids to ensure that he had those precious moments with them. It's something that makes me, you know, sad that I know that he won't have a lot of those moments moving forward. But we do what every family does. We navigate forward. We deal with the bad situation that we have to, and we move forward. And like so many families, that's what we'll do, and we'll figure it out.
Congressman, to you and your family, including your sister, who is a great broadcaster over at MSNBC, we wish you and your family all the best. Thank you, Congressman.
Thanks so much, Steve. I appreciate it.
You got it. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
To watch more Think Tank with Steve Adubato, find us online and follow us on social media.
At the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities, affordability is always top of mind. We offer a variety of energy assistance and other programs to help New Jersey residents reduce their energy use and save money. The Community Solar Energy Program delivers immediate electric bill savings to all subscribers regardless of income. And our free Comfort Partners program helps qualified residents save money and make energy efficient upgrades. We work to put affordability within reach for New Jersey residents.
Here at Kane University, everyone gets their chance to climb higher. Michael came to Kane and found his passion for healthcare, and now he's a doctor. After Trisha graduated, her graphic design work was featured in the New York Times. Samantha is studying athletic training and finding her path to an internship with the New York Giants. Real students, real stories, real success. Cougars climb higher. Kane University.
A dream is just a dream until your ambition ignites it. Pursuing your legacy takes drive, resilience, and a financial partner who not only sees your vision for your future, but who will go all in with you and focus your ambitions for what you hunger to achieve next.
New Jersey is home to the best public schools in the nation. And that didn't happen by accident. It's the result of parents, educators, and communities working together year after year to give our students a world-class education, no matter the challenge. Because parents and educators know that with a shared commitment to our public schools, our children can learn, grow, and thrive. And together, we can keep New Jersey's public schools the best in the nation.
Steve Adubato back, and we are joined by Alan Blinder, who is a national correspondent with the New York Times. Alan, good to see you.
Good to see you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
You got it. We're taping on the 15th of July. Be seen later. Front page of the New York Times, your paper, the gray lady, if you will. Education Department can be gutted. Justices decide. The Supreme Court of the United States has said, Mr. President, you can gut it. You can get rid of everyone there. What is the impact? And you write about education, higher education a lot. What do you believe the impact of that could be, would be?
Well, with what we hear from analysts on a pretty routine basis, former Department of Education officials, people who watch this world very closely, for higher education, they worry about delays to federal student aid going out and how that will all be processed going forward. The Department of Education is really kind of a funding clearinghouse, and they do a lot of civil rights investigations. So it remains to be seen how all this will really play out. But it was an extraordinary decision from the Supreme Court that, when you talk to critics of it, they think will really transform the American educational landscape. And when you talk to supporters of it, they see it as removing bloat in the bureaucracy.
You know, the cliche, you say bloat, waste, fraud, excuse me, and abuse. Many presidents, disproportionately Republicans, have been talking about, quote, doing away with the Department of Education for years. Do you think those who advocate for getting rid of the Department of Education have any understanding of what the impact, the implications of doing that really are?
You know, I think some people probably do. I think some people probably suspect that this is just it's government growth gone wild. You're right. It's been a critique of the department for basically its entire existence. There have been people crusading for its closure. So we'll see how it actually materializes. I mean, look, at this point, the department is, as the front page put it, being gutted. But you know, it's not closed in full yet. But it's really going to be interesting and important to watch over the coming months and years how that actually materializes.
It's not as if higher education, the elites and ivory towers, haven't been attacked by politicians from the in the White House or other places. I mean, it's been going on for years. But what is different about the Trump administration going after Harvard, other universities, on their DEI policies, on to what degree they're protecting Jewish students or fighting against anti-Semitism as they frame it in the White House, or a whole range of other, higher ed policies that they say, because you're not doing what we want you to do, we are going to cut funding. We're going to cut research dollars. Is that unprecedented in United States history?
Yeah, that's what you're getting at. I mean, the idea that you would have colleges really losing research funding, in Harvard's case, potentially billions of dollars in funding. Yeah, to your point, we have heard especially conservatives criticize higher education and the elite institutions for a long time. But these tactics of opening these investigations, of cutting off funding, of, in the case of Harvard and Columbia, really sending specific demands that would involve hiring and admission, some elements of how the university is structured, that is something we have not seen before. And that's why you're hearing so much alarm from people in higher education. People in higher education are used to getting beaten up by politicians, by the press, by people online. What they're not used to is that beating going from a rhetorical one into one that really is striking at their bottom lines and how they operate.
So I'm a Rutgers grad, an alum. Thousands of others come out of the State University of New Jersey, Rutgers.
Sure.
Rutgers is getting cut as well. Rutgers is raising tuition as we speak. Other colleges and universities raising tuition, making serious cutbacks in staff and faculty. Do you believe that's what people voted for when Donald Trump won not only the Electoral College, but the popular vote, that he would be doing this as the president?
Well, I don't think he ran on the platform of raising tuition. Look, we've seen tuition rising at schools, even those that are not really in the biggest line of fire, so to speak. You're seeing tuition increases across the board. I'm taping this today from just outside of Omaha, and the University of Nebraska, for example, is raising tuition and doing some cuts in the coming academic year. So it's not just the elite schools, it's schools all over the board that are for a variety of reasons finding they need to raise tuition, cut services. The University of Minnesota is both raising tuition and cutting services. So, you know, the idea of doing more with less, they are now, students are going to be getting less for less. Less for more, I'm sorry.
But hold on, you're in Nebraska right now.
Yeah.
Where you happen to be taping today, University of Nebraska. So you said that President Trump did not run on saying he wanted colleges and universities to raise tuition, but isn't it a de facto, and this is not an attempt to protect or defend higher education, the cost Sure. of higher education is too high, has nothing to do with President Trump, but when you cut federal funding to the higher ed community, doesn't that de facto mean on some level you'll either have to make serious budget cuts and or raise tuition?
It can, yeah. It depends on the institution, how acutely that's going to hit. In some places, it's not just they're getting squeezed by federal issues, it's that their state appropriations are flat. It's that their state appropriations are effectively being cut. That's part of the pressure too. It's not just a federal thing. There is, especially with major state universities, you'll see a fair number of schools that aren't getting more support from their state houses, and that's a significant drag on their financial model too. There are a lot of different inputs and outputs playing out here, but no, there's no doubt the federal element is a hugely consequential one, especially when it comes to research money.
On the DEI side, if higher ed institutions simply continue the same programs around diversity, equity, and inclusion, but just change the names of those programs and use different language to frame it, if people in the White House or others look on the website and they don't see the words diversity, equity, inclusion, but universities and colleges continue to engage in policies that diversify the campus, include others, and promote equity in higher education, is that enough, in your opinion, to keep those who are going after higher ed institutions on the DEI side to let it go, or are they going to look deeper?
One of my colleagues was recently writing about the turmoil of the University of Virginia, one of the country's great public institutions. And the president there at Virginia, a guy named Jim Ryan, had been a deep advocate of DEI initiatives. And they renamed some things. I think someone had a title of like, it went from like a diversity VP to a community engagement VP. And at Day's End, the Trump administration put enormous pressure on Virginia and said, well, you're not moving fast enough, you're not moving swiftly enough, you're hiding the ball. And now Jim Ryan is no longer going to be president of the University of Virginia. So no, the administration does not appear to be warm to simply, you know, moving names around, moving titles around. And they appear intent on rooting out these types of programs and figuring out where they have been placed.
Yeah, last question on my end. Academic freedom. Those of us who have taught in higher education and been a part of the higher ed community understand and appreciate academic freedom. To what degree, from your experience as a journalist, is quote unquote academic freedom in peril?
Well, if you ask some of the universities that have got, you know, into the Trump administration's line of fire, they see it as profoundly under threat. I mean, I was talking to a number of people at Harvard, of course, in recent weeks, and they've argued that any kind of intervention from the outside around hiring, around admissions, around faculty power, around how, you know, they're on viewpoint diversity and demanding that certain things be taught or added or whatnot.
Or not taught.
That's exactly. So, they wanted to shut down DEI programs at Harvard as one of the conditions. When you get into that kind of space, what I hear routinely from presidents and chancellors and professors and others is that they see it as a significant encroachment on academic freedom. And that's, you know, that's kind of been the cornerstone of American academia for generations. So they see a profound threat emerging, and they're not quite sure the way out of it at this point.
Yeah, academic freedom and also freedom of the press. I think that's in the Constitution. Do you think it is, Alan?
I do think that, yes.
I'm pretty sure. Alan Blinder is national correspondent for the New York Times. Alan, we appreciate you being with us, particularly particularly from Nebraska. Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
You got it. I'm Steve Adubato. We'll see you next time.
Think Tank with Steve Adubato is a production of the Caucus Educational Corporation. Funding has been provided by the Terrell Fund, a foundation serving children, New Jersey Sharing Network, Kane University, RWJ Barnabas Health, Let's Be Healthy Together, the New Jersey Education Association, New Jersey's Clean Energy Program, Valley Bank, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, and by the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. Promotional support provided by Meadowlands Media and by NJ Biz.
At the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities, affordability is always top of mind. We offer a variety of energy assistance and other programs to help New Jersey residents reduce their energy use and save money. The Community Solar Energy Program delivers immediate electric bill savings to all subscribers regardless of income. And our free Comfort Partners program helps qualified residents save money and make energy efficient upgrades. We work to put affordability within reach for New Jersey residents.
Here at Kane University, everyone gets their chance to climb higher. Michael came to Kane and found his passion for healthcare, and now he's a doctor. After Trisha graduated, her graphic design work was featured in the New York Times. Samantha is studying athletic training and finding her path to an internship with the New York Giants. Real students, real stories, real success. Cougars climb higher. Kane University.
A dream is just a dream until your ambition ignites it. Pursuing your legacy takes drive, resilience, and a financial partner who not only sees your vision for your future, but who will go all in with you and focus your ambitions for what you hunger to achieve next.
New Jersey is home to the best public schools in the nation. And that didn't happen by accident. It's the result of parents, educators, and communities working together year after year to give our students a world-class education, no matter the challenge. Because parents and educators know that with a shared commitment to our public schools, our children can learn, grow, and thrive. And together, we can keep New Jersey's public schools the best in the nation.